There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesman-Ellen. I'm your host on today's program, Community Radio in Eastern Europe. We'll have the second part of my recent conversation with John Anderson of DIYmedia.net about his recent visit to a radio conference in Budapest, Hungary, where he also had the opportunity to check out some community stations operating in that country. You do want to stay tuned. Although community radio has been around for more than 50 years in the United States, it's a much newer phenomenon in a lot of countries, especially those of the former Soviet Union. This week, we'll hear the second part of my conversation with John Anderson of DIYmedia.net. He was at a conference about digital radio held in Budapest, Hungary, in May. But during that time, he also got an opportunity to talk to people who have a lot to do with community radio and even visit a very special community radio station in Hungary. So here John tells us a little bit more about community radio in Hungary and other parts of Europe.
It's really important to realize that Hungary is part of a bloc of nations in Europe that is making the transition from what I like to call the second world to the first world. You know, it's not a backwater country with no running water and working transportation system and everything. That is very, very westernized. Externally, if you go to Budapest, other than the language being impenetrable, it's not a lot different from going to any other city in Western Europe or in the United States. But at the same time, there is a lot of catch-up work that has to be done. You know, it's only been 18 years since these countries have actually had what you could at least nominally call democratic systems of governance, marketplace economics, and things like that. I met a woman who's works with the broadcast regulator in Macedonia, for example. And what she said was, as soon as the communist government fell, 300 pirate radio stations went on the air. Because suddenly it was an open zone. It was the Wild West, and people were gonna claim their space. They were homesteading, right? Because they knew that the regulatory landscape was changing underneath their feet, and if they wanted to be in on the action, they had to claim a piece of land. They had to claim a piece of spectrum. And so, what did the Macedonian government do? They gave them all licenses. The regulatory system was not in place to effectively control the broadcast spectrum, and therefore, many people got in to radio and got legitimized in their national broadcast landscape by taking the initiative of going without a license, simply in a lot of cases because the licensing mechanism did not exist.
Well, isn't that how it started in the United States in a lot of
ways?
It's
true. I mean, you
only
know,
it was some 80 years beforehand,
but right? And we didn't have chaos because we're dealing with 1990s, circa 1990 broadcast technology as opposed to circa 1920 broadcast technology. So, you know, a lot of people were able to go on the air, and Macedonia can support 300 radio stations. they figured out a way to do it. Time sharing and very specific power requirements and things like that. And so in a lot of ways in countries like Hungary and Macedonia and Slovenia, you have regulators just beginning to get control over the radio spectrum. And now that they have control over the radio spectrum, one of the things they've done is they've sold off some of that spectrum. For example, in Italy, you buy the license from the government. if you want to be on the air, you essentially buy a license from the government, and then you have a claim, you have a title or a deed to that channel in that specific area, and you have to demonstrate that you're using the channel in order to keep it. But there's no license renewal process and things like that. It's a pretty straightforward transaction. And you know, that was a good boost for a lot of these countries, like Hungary. It gave them an infusion of capital into their coffers as they were making what is still a relatively painful socioeconomic transition. But at the same time, there were people engaged in broadcasting who were engaged in it for non-economic reasons. We have an opportunity here to represent civil society or to represent an underrepresented community, to actually give these people a voice. And so we're going to put our station on the air. And some of these stations, similar to the Macedonian example, have, you know, ultimately eventually become legalized. Now, I went and visited two radio stations. They're both in Budapest. One is called Radio Civil, which basically means civil radio. And its specific mandate is to cater to civil society. It is attached to a cultural community center, and it has a mandate, a mission statement, that says that it will cater to Hungarian civil society. So it is a representative voice within the broadcast community and within Hungarians' media environment more generally for civil society, non-governmental organizations. We'd call them, I guess, progressive institutions. But also people, you know, for people that do not have a voice. When I went and visited, I happened to get there between shows, and the show that was being finished was a show of some guy talking about local politics in Budapest specifically, because this was a very small radio station. I think it was only broadcasting with 50 watts. And then the next show was a kid's show where a couple of adults came in with a couple of teenage girls and basically ran the controls and let the teenage girls talk about teenage issues. And so that was a very important thing. And they've received recognition from the Hungarian broadcast regulator that what they're doing is a useful service. And they are, in a sense, because Hungary doesn't have a strong state broadcasting system anymore. That was dismantled as part of the downfall of the communist system. These are supplementary avenues and outlets, and so they struggle much like non-commercial radio stations in the United States do. They are not subsidized well by the by their federal government, but they have carved out a space of legitimacy. The second radio station that I visited was actually much more intriguing and really kind of tugged at my heartstrings a lot more than Radio Civil did. This station is called Radio C, and it's the C stands, it's the first letter of the Hungarian word for gypsy. And most Americans don't know this, but there's a people, an ethnic people in Europe called the Roma people. That are transient. They are somewhat nomadic, and they exist in all of Europe. You can find them in the UK, Germany, Spain, Italy, Hungary. You know, wherever there are Roma people. And this radio station was initially set up as an unlicensed radio station to be a outlet for not only expressions of Roma culture, but also as a way for Hungarians more generally to understand that the things they consider to be Hungarian have roots in the Roma culture. One of the managers of this radio station said, "You know, we," and he's talking about the Roma in Hungary, "are like your blacks in America in the 1940s." We are still subject to segregation. There is still persecution of our people, and we have not been able to create the momentum to kick off a civil rights movement like African Americans did in the 1950s and 1960s. We haven't reached that point yet, but this radio station is a beachhead where we can open dialogue between the larger Hungarian community and not only show them who we are, but show them that actually we're a lot like them and they share a lot in common with us. And it's worked for them. They are the eighth most listened to radio station in Budapest. And Budapest has something like 30 radio stations in it. So I mean, they're in the top third. They have a website. They stream online. And they have 250,000 unique listeners a month to their radio station. And they also have a 10,000-watt transmitter. So they can be heard over, 50 square kilometers, Budapest and beyond. And they're working to extend their range by setting up more radio stations or, working to do these sorts of things. And that was very heartening to see that there were people who were very engaged in community media for a lot of the ways that we've traditionally thought about it, but we always look at it intellectually, Ivana Kantako in Springfield set up Human Rights Radio because police brutality was really hurting the African-American community in Springfield. He personally suffered from that, and he had no choice. And in a lot of cases, this is the way it's going. It's not as desperate of a situation. It's much more of a proactive effort, and it's definitely a struggle. Radio C, this Roma radio station, just got formally recognized by the Hungarian government as eligible for funding through their public broadcasting media initiative. So they've been promised money from the federal government to help subsidize what it is they're doing, but they have not received that money yet, And I asked the general manager, who didn't speak Hungarian, so we had a translator, and I said, how do you survive? And he's like, we're Roma. We know how to survive. We have a strong community, and the community knows what we're doing, and the community is involved in the production of content on this radio station, and they understand the importance of it. And so we pray to God every day that we get up in the morning and that the radio station still keeps running, and somehow it continues to function. It definitely is a leap of faith. But it's really demonstrable for me, especially, that if we get caught up in this whole idea of the digitalization of radio, we are missing out on some of the benefits that analog service continues to provide and is, frankly, irreplaceable in a digital environment. And that gets back to the question of what is radio? And in countries like Hungary, community radio is still very much community radio. And the interesting thing about it for me is that as opposed to, say, community radio in the United States, where it's, kind of a, we like to think it's a big tent thing. Anybody can come and be on our airwaves if they like. Although typically stations do serve a specific, typically progressive, ideological leaning or whatnot. These are very identifiable constituencies. So this is the radio station for the Roma people. This is the radio station where the Roma people know that they can go and get information about their community. And it's also a station that Hungarians know, more generally, the Hungarian people know, is a Roma voice. And that was interesting to me, because we don't have that kind of, at least we'd like to think we don't have that kind of ethnic or socioeconomic stratification in the United States. We still live under that myth that we're all kind of equal in opportunity's eyes. And in that case, countries like Hungary are way far ahead of us in recognizing that there is value in diversity and difference, and that we need to actually preserve that by making sure that everyone does have an outlet and a voice. And it's actually been very successful. The folks at Radio C were telling me one day about Woody Allen. Woody Allen visited Hungary. This is probably back in like the late 90s or early aughts, around a decade ago. And Woody Allen is a big jazz fan. He loves jazz. I don't know what he was doing in Budapest, but he was asking a taxi driver who happened to be a Roma individual, where can I find the best jazz in town? And he's like, well, if you want, start with Radio C. Start with this radio station. It's the radio station of the Roma people. And it just so happens that the radio station is hosting a concert tonight. So Woody Allen went to his hotel, and he turned on the radio, and he listened to this awesome, awesome music produced by Roma, the Roma people. They're very influential in the jazz scene, that, that some of the best jazz musicians could be found in this community. And he was blown away. So he went to the concert, and he was blown away by the concert. And he ended up hooking up with these the managers of Radio C. And he's like, you know, so what are you guys doing now? And they're like, well, we're going back to the radio station because the musicians are going to come back and do a live set. And he's like, I'll meet you there. Tell me where to go. And he went back to his hotel, and he got his instruments, and he jammed out on the radio station for like 6 hours with the gypsies, you know, and had a ball. And, you know, the Roma don't know Woody Allen from Jack, you know.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't like, oh, Woody Allen came to our radio station. They didn't realize that until after the fact, right? Then they looked up who Woody Allen was and realized, holy crap, we have this famous movie person who came and graced us with our presence. And they're obviously very proud of that. But it goes to show how in some ways the organic nature of community media in a country like Hungary is really doing good things to help with overall social development and, most importantly, the concept of media justice, especially as these countries navigate, and they still are. They are still struggling to make the transition to the Western market-oriented democracy that is the European Union.
You know, it seems to me that digital radio doesn't make this state of affairs with a more diverse public service oriented radio service impossible or render it even difficult, but it does, it changes that policy discussion, at least in a European model, because of the centralization that's necessary. It sounds a lot to me like satellite radio here in the US, more than our traditional broadcasts. And satellite radio is essentially consolidation under currently, and maybe not for much longer, two providers. Although currently they're not required to open up their spectrum, open up channel space. That's what sort of digital broadcasting sounds like to me in Europe.
Yeah, you know, there is a, that's true to a certain extent, but there is also a third way. You know, one of the things that broadcast regulators around the world have been hung up on is what's the standard? What's the standard? What is the infrastructure that we are going to adopt in order to make digital broadcasting work? And they have discovered that the standard that they've adopted is not doing what they want it to do. We are, at, you know, as far as the United States goes, we are playing catch up in learning these hard lessons with a different standard, right? But HD radio, the U.S. standard, and DAB, or Eureka 147, the European standard, are no longer the only broadcast radio standards that exist. And so in many ways, instead of potentially continuing the trend towards centralization repurposing the AM and FM spectrum, there is an active engagement in some countries like Switzerland, for example, of exploring new digital broadcast technologies. And the one that is probably the most prevalent across the scene is what's called Digital Radio Mondial, otherwise known as DRM. And that's got that acronym has a bad connotation over here, but that's what they call it, DRM, Digital Radio Mondial. And this was an open standard that was collaboratively developed by more than 30 countries, including China. So it's larger than Europe. This is a pan global effort, as you put it. And it was initially developed for use on long wave and short wave and medium wave broadcasting. And it is being successfully deployed in the short wave broadcast environment right now. But the technology has evolved to a point that they're finding it useful for medium wave technology, for medium wave use as well, AM broadcasting. And so regulators are now beginning to say, hey, there's this other technology out there, and maybe it's better. Maybe it's more spectrally efficient. Maybe we can actually increase audio quality and signal robustness. Maybe we can do the goals of enhancing diversity while preserving localism through this new technology. So let's do some comparative analysis. And at the same time as this is happening, the DRM consortium, the group behind the standard, is expanding the range of the standard's operability. So there is now a standard called DRM Plus. And DRM Plus is designed for use on the FM dial. And there are comparative analyses taking place. In fact, the results of one that I'm very interested in is going to compare DRM Plus to HD radio. And it's actually being conducted in Austria, Switzerland, and Germany, I believe. And they've been running these different transmitters in different parts of the country for a year or two now, and they've taken measurements and, you know, are collecting empirical evidence, and then they will come to some sort of analysis. So no one is locking themselves into a standard. Even though countries have adopted standards, alternative standards exist that did not exist when the initial decision to adopt the current standard was made. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's not that, oh, geez, we have Product X, and we have Coke and Pepsi, you know, choose your poison, find the one that's least evil. There is actual technological innovation going on within the broadcast community, because people are coming to the realization that the concept of digital broadcasting as we know it infrastructurally and technologically is not working to promote the goals of what we want the service of radio broadcasting to be. And that's another tricky situation. You can look at it one way, very technologically deterministic, or you can try to look at it technologically agnostic, but you can't get around the fact that the technology and the protocols that you use to communicate will ultimately affect the service. And no one is quite, we know what doesn't work. There are potential alternatives out there that might work, but they're not well tested enough to make any sort of fundamental proclamations about it. But it's definitely on the platter of discourse. It is within the acceptable range of debate, at least in Europe, to consider the possibility of a third way, of an alternate broadcast technology, a second generation, if you will, digital broadcast technology.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because one worry I had is that given the difficulty in the European experience with digital audio broadcasting, DAB, using, you know, a new set of spectrum, I was worried that maybe the IBOC/HD radio approach might start to appeal to them, despite the fact that it's not very popular or going very well here in the U.S., but you never know, you know, the power of ubiquity to go over there and lobby hard, you know, could blow enough smoke to get in their eyes.
Oh, they're trying. Ubiquity is in Europe, and they are marketing. There are HD radio tests happening in European countries. For example, I was talking with a guy from Zurich, Switzerland, who says that we have this one retired broadcast engineer who somehow, we don't understand how or why, has become an evangelist for ubiquity. And, you know, Switzerland's a small country, right? And the broadcast community in Switzerland's pretty small. So if you're well-known enough and have worked long enough in the area, you're going to know the regulators. And he's gotten the regulators to allow ubiquity to run HD radio field trials, right? Because he's ubiquity's ambassador, for lack of a better term, to try to promulgate this technology into other countries where other DAB technologies are not living up to their promise. And I am most concerned that ubiquity is going to focus on the so-called emerging markets, as, you know, as I was talking about, Macedonia and Slovenia, where these countries haven't even started thinking about a digital radio transition plan. And ubiquity is going to come in and say, look, we got this easy, cheap, effective way to make it painless. Look, we can do it. And the guy from Switzerland was like, send me everything you've written on HD radio, because I need it. I need information that I can go to the Swiss broadcast regulator with and say, no, this is not the plan. You know, this is not working. And the consensus, at least among the 30 or so activists and scholars and policy regulators and things like that, that were in the room in Budapest for this conference, were, we know HD radio is a dog. We know that it's not really feasible to do in Europe, partially because stations are packed closer on the dial together in Europe than they are in the United States. And so there isn't enough spectral capacity to allow each analog station to effectively double its footprint. So it's a non-starter in a lot of ways, but Ubiquiti is trying to play on the ignorance of its own technology. Hype the snake oil aspect, downplay the side effects, and there is, I believe, a real fear that they could get their foot in the door. For a while, there was an HD radio station broadcasting from the Eiffel Tower. Now, of course, there's no HD-compatible receivers in Paris for anybody to listen to it, but that's one hell of a publicity coup for Ubiquiti, right? We're in Paris and we're broadcasting from the Eiffel Tower. So, doesn't that mean our technology is legitimate? The other concern that I have when it comes to this is that Ubiquiti is not stupid. Ubiquiti is a creation of the U.S. broadcast industry. And the U.S. broadcast industry, if you want to call it this, is a subsidiary of the larger U.S. culture industry. What is one of the United States's largest exports? It's culture. It's media. And I think that it's not beyond the realm of possibility to believe that Ubiquiti could go to someone like, say, the World Trade Organization and say, hey, Germany, you must consider HD radio, because if you don't, you're violating trade laws of free competition. You're not giving our standard a fair shake. Outside of the fact that our standard really sucks, but you're not giving it a fair shake, right? And so we're going to invoke trade laws, neoliberal trade laws, in order to force you to consider adopting our standard. And that has not happened yet. But I really do think that especially in the emergent developing countries, the second world countries, that Ubiquiti may try to leverage that sort of national political and economic power as a way to try to increase their market footprint.
Well, John, thanks.
You are very welcome, sir.
And that was John Anderson of DIYmedia.net. He's on the Media Geek program frequently to talk about issues related to regulation, spectrum issues, and especially about digital radio, a topic that he is researching for his doctoral dissertation work at the University of Illinois Institute of Communication Research. Our conversation there was about community radio in Hungary and Europe. And check out John's website, of course, at diymedia.net. He follows a lot about community broadcasting and especially unlicensed broadcasting. He keeps up with the FCC's action against unlicensed broadcasters. He also has a great archive of sound collage, so-called truthful translations. All of that at diymedia.net. And that brings to a close this edition of Media Geek. I will be back in 1 week with more news and views of our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at mediageek.net, and the radio show, of course, is at radio.mediageek.net. In addition to online, Media Geek is heard on great community stations like WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And the first station to air Media Geek, of course, is WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. And if you're interested in hearing more about community radio around the world, you can go back into the archives at radio.mediageek.net to June 2007. The June 15th and 22nd shows feature a radio documentary about community radio in India. So, of course, you can always go back in time and check out things you might have missed or listen again. And if you have any comments, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.